parsha for this week is Parshat Shlach, the parsha of the great tragedy that befell the Jewish people in the desert. Moshe Rabbeinu sends 12 meraglim to spy out the land, and we know what the results are. They return. 10 of them give a pessimistic report. The nations that live in Eretz Canaan are strong. We will not be able to vanquish them. Only two remain strong and faithful and optimistic, and they are Yehoshua ben Nun and Kalev ben Yefune, who say, Olon alev yorashno oto, we can go up to the land and inherit it. However, Klal Yisrael are swept away by the report of the Meraglim, and God decrees that that entire generation will not go into Eretz Yisrael. They will die in the desert. They must remain there for 40 years, a year corresponding to each one of the days that the Meraglim spent in Eretz Yisrael. 40 days, 40 years, the new generation that will be born in the desert, they're the ones who will go into Eretz Yisrael. It becomes the great tragedy for all generations. God says, Atem bechitem bechiyo shel chinam, you cried a cry in vain and for naught, for no good reason. You will therefore, I will give you bechiya lezorot, a reason to cry in all generations. The night that Klal Yisrael cried was the night of Tisha B'Av, and Tisha B'Av has become the day of great tragedy throughout all of Jewish history. So here it is, a people who at the beginning of last week said, at the beginning of Baha'alotcha, they were preparing themselves for the great march into Eretz Yisrael. Then comes the parsha of the Mit'oninim, they begin to complain, and there are murmurings, and obviously there's hesitation, and finally fear, and they're not ready to go into Eretz Yisrael. So the die is cast, the gezeira from God, they are to remain in the desert and die there. The Haftorah takes us really about 38 years later. It's the end of the 40 years in the desert. Moshe has died. It is now the end of the 30 days of the mourning for Moshe. Moshe died on the 7th of Adar. It's the 7th of Nisan. Klal Yisrael are now encamped along the east bank of the Jordan, indeed ready for the thrust into Eretz Yisrael. It's a new generation. A new generation. They're ready to go. Yehoshua is now the commander-in-chief of Klal Yisrael. The Haftorah is chapter 2 of Yehoshua, where Yehoshua sends Meraglim to Eretz Canaan. There are a number of fascinating things that we've had to say in previous years about this Haftorah. We will add to it this year, and we'll sort of take a look at the entire picture of an absolutely unusual Haftorah. So first let's read. Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun min Hashitim. Yehoshua bin Nun sent from Shittim Shnayim Anashim Meraglim, two people, spies, Cheresh, in silence, Lamor, so saying. They are charged with the responsibility, Lechu Re'u et Ha'aretz, go see the land, Ve'et Yericho, and see Yericho. Vayelchu, and they went, Vayavohu Beit Isha Zonan, they came to the house of a woman, and there are two meanings of the word Zonah. One is that she was an innkeeper, and the word zonah comes from the word zon, umefarnes, the one who provides sustenance for. And it also means, indeed, that she was a woman of ill repute. Zonah, as the word zonah, the meaning that it usually has in Tanakh. Ushma Rachav, her name was Rachav, vayishkivu shama, and they lay down there. And it was said to the king of Yericho, Lamor, so saying, Hine anoshim bo heina halaylo. Behold, people have come here tonight, mibnei Yisrael, from amongst the children of Israel, lachpor et haaretz, to dig out the land, to get information. By Yishlach melech Yericho el Rochav leimar, and the king of Yericho sent to Rochav, so saying, hotzi hanoshim haboyim elayich, send out the men who have come to you, asher bo leviteich, who come to your house. Ki lachpor et kol haaretz bo, because they have come to spy out the entire land. Batikako Yisrael Shnei HaAnoshim, the woman took the two men, Batitzpano, and she hid him. Two men, but it says Batitzpano, and she hid him, she concealed him. The Mefarshim say that it could simply mean that, you know, she did it quickly, and it was as though she had hid the two of them. The Medrash tells us that who are these two men? And it's important to remember that the Pasuk does not reveal the identity of these two people, which is going to be an important point. The Pasuk does not reveal their identity, but Chazal tell us that this was Pinchas and Kalev. And Pinchas said that, listen, I am sort of an angel. I can be seen and not seen. I can be invisible, so that you don't have to hide me. But the one whom you have to conceal is Kalev, so that she hides only one of them. Vatome, and she says to the soldiers who've come from the king, Cain, yes, Bo Eli Panoshim, the people came here. V'loyadati me'ayin hema, I don't know where they're from. Vayihi hashar lizgor, as the gate of the city was about to be locked, v'choshech, in the darkness, v'ha anoshim yatso, the people went out. Loyadati, I don't know, onoholchu ha anoshim, where the people went to. Ridfu maher achareyem, pursue them quickly, ki pasigun, because you'll catch them. She seems to be taking this, she is very, very cool, calm, and collected about it. She lies, she just lies through her teeth, but lies with such aplomb, assuredness, with absolutely no difficulty. Yes, yes, there were people who came here, I don't know where they're from, I don't know who they are. And as the gates were about to be locked, they left the city. Hurry, hurry after them quickly, because you will get them. And meanwhile, v'hi he'elatam hagaga, she had taken them up to the roof, batitmenein depishtei ha'etz, and she concealed them in the stalks of flax, ha'aruchot la'al hagag, that was spread out on the roof. They used to spread them out in order to dry. And she hid the men on the roof. The men, that is, the officers of the king, pursued them along the way to the Yarden, al hamabrot, to the bridges, v'hashar sogaru, and they locked the gate of the city after they left, acharei kasher yatsu harodfim achareim. After the pursuers left, they locked the gates of the city. V'hemoteron yishkavon. And they, before they went to sleep, v'hi olta aleihem alagag, she went up to speak to them on the roof. What she says to them is going to be the second part of the shir. First part of the shir will deal with these spies. Yes. I think Pinchas would say that, I don't know, he said this. It's unnecessary. He doesn't have to be concealed. He doesn't have to be hidden. He can.
No,
none whatsoever. No. Chazal, you know. I, all right, let's. Yes. So therefore, it could very well mean, Batitzpano means that she hid them in one place together quickly. Sometimes the singular can be used when dealing with a plural. All right. The first question that we have to deal with is for 38 years earlier, Moshe had sent spies. And a terrible tragedy was the result of his having sent spies. Yehoshua, who is the great student of Moshe, why does he do the same thing now? Isn't he concerned that maybe the entire mission is going to backfire? Why does he send miraglim? So the Malbim tells us that if we read clearly and carefully the first pasuk of the Haftarah, we will see that there were significant differences between the miraglim that was sent by Moshe and those who were sent by Yehoshua. And maybe it's important to point out that while we refer to the 12 people and then the 10 who remain at the end in our Sedra as miraglim, they are nowhere in the Sedra referred to as miraglim. It's called the Chet HaMeraglim, the sin of the Meraglim, but that's not what they are referred to in the Sedra. Moshe sends them Latur et Haaretz, which means really to tour the land, and they return from being Tar et Haaretz. They are referred to as Tarim, not as Meraglim. And the fact is that they were not sent in order to find the weaknesses of the country or how to attack. They were supposed to come back with a report about the country. And Moshe said, he gave them, at the beginning of the Sedra, he told them, go. But Moshe sent them Latur et Haaretz to see the land, by Yomer Aleim, and he told them, go up through the Negev, go up the mountain, see the land, what it is, and the people that live in the land. Are they strong? Are they weak? Are they many? Are they few? Umaha, that's Asheru Yosheva. And to tell us something about the land. Hatovahi imra'a, is it good or is it bad? Umaha, Haarim Asher, Uyoshevahena. And the cities in which they live, are they Mahanim o Mivtzarim, open cities, or are they fortified cities? Yes. That's quite obvious. Now that you say it, I hear the point has to be made. If you're sending spies, you don't send 12. They're really representing specific interests, each tribe. So those who are sent by Moshe in the Sedra are Tarim. The word Meraglim is not used. Where is the word Meraglim indeed used? Here in the Haftarah, Yehoshua sent Meraglim. So now, the Malbim points out that if we take each part of the first pasuk, we're going to see the basic and fundamental differences between the mission in the days of Moshe and the mission at the time of Yehoshua. First of all, let's begin at the Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun. And Yehoshua bin Nun sent. Now, in the days of Moshe, it was not one single person who sent. In the days of Moshe, it was Klal Yisrael who sent. It was the people who wanted their representatives to go to Eretz Canaan. Here it's one single person who is sending them, Yehoshua ben Nun, and in the Sedra, the Meraglim in quotation marks was sent by all of Klal Yisrael. It's not so clear here in the Sedra, but in Sefer Devarim, in Parashat Devarim, where Moshe tells the whole story all over again, there he points out that all of Klal Yisrael, you all came to me and you said, let us send people to see the land. There's a difference when a community of millions sends representatives, and where the one man, the commander-in-chief, sends. So Vayishlach Yehoshua bin Nun sends, and that's not what took place in the Sedra, it was Klal Yisrael who said it. Second, he sends them Min Hashitim. Min Hashitim was right on the banks of the Yarden. Moshe had sent them from Midbar Paran far away. Here, at the time of Yoshua, they are indeed ready. They are ready for the thrust into Eretz Yisrael. Yes.
You said that, who sent the first body?
People.
Fine. But the first part is said by the Yerim and Moshe Lemore. It's the first thing.
That's why I pointed out that what is not said here in the Sedra is made clear in Sefer Devarim. And there are the entire parasha of the Meraglim is repeated in Parashat Devarim. And there, a different story appears. And there are reasons why some of it appears here and the rest of it appears there. In Parashat Devarim, I'll just read a few psukim for you, and you will see. Yeah. In Shlishi of Parashat Devarim, it says, "Vatikrivun elai kulchem, all of you came close to me, and Batomru, you said, Nishlecha anashim lefaneinu, let us send people before us, v'yachperu lanu et haaretz, they should spy out the land." V'yashivu al tanu davar, they should bring us back word et haderech asher naleba ve'et harim asher navo aleihem, the way we should go up to the land and the cities that we should come against. Vayitav ve'einai hadavar, and this was good in my eyes, and I took ve'akach mikem shneim osor anoshim ish echad lashavet. I took 12 men, one from each tribe. So what is not said in Parshat Shlach is more clearly elaborated by Moshe in Parshat Devarim. So I say, number one, in the Sedra, the Meraglim, the 12 are sent by Klal Yisrael. In the Haftorah, it is only Yahushua who sends them. Number two, Yahushua sends them Min Hashitim. Shitim is indeed the jump-off point for the invasion of Eretz Yisrael. We're not talking about people that are somewhere in the desert and are sending a study mission to Eretz Yisrael. In the Sedra, it's a study mission. In the Haftorah, it's really, really spies. Now, Yahushua sends, Vayishlach Yahushua min Hashitim, Yahushua bin Nun sent from Shitim, Shnayim, Anashim Meraglim. Two people who are, and what does he call them? Meraglim. Really, spies. These are also differences between Yehoshua and the Sedra. In the Sedra, it's not two, it's 12. In the Haftorah, it's two. And the two in the Haftorah are referred to as Meraglim. These are indeed spies. It was not so in the days of Moshe. And he sent them Chedesh. Chedesh means in silence. You know how you send spies? You send a spy out into the cold, you send him out in silence. You don't make an announcement to 3 million people that we are sending 12 spies to Eretz Yisrael. Then that's not the kind of mission for spies. Fascinatingly enough, the Medrash reads the word Chedesh, that the word has another meaning. The other meaning of the word Chedesh is Cheres. Cheres means pottery. Pottery. You know what a spy needs? A spy needs a cover. So he gives them, Yahushua ben Nun gives them pots and pans, and they pretend that they are purveyors of pots. They sell pots. I mean, they're coming into the city, and we're going to see, and we've already sensed it, that the city is a city that is under extreme curfew. the doors are locked shut at night. Even when the messengers of the king leave the city in order to pursue the so-called spies, the pasuk makes clear to tell you that the door is locked, the gates of the city are locked behind them. It's a city in curfew, which means that you can't simply get into the city. They're obviously going to wonder who you are, so they have to come in with a cover. Their cover is that they are pop peddlers. Yes. Here we're going to see that the Navi points out very carefully later on, V'yericho sigurau mesugeret. Yericho is locked, shut, tight. And I'm going to prove it from a number of other instances. We're talking about a unique and very special kind of locking. And I'm going to prove it. We're not talking about simply a city that, at night, before the city goes to sleep, you just lock the doors, you close the saragim on the mirpeset, and you put your platelet key into the door. No. There is a very, very special kind of atmosphere that now pervades this city. And it's curfew. There's martial law in the city. I'll prove it. So Yahushua sends them, and their cover is that they sell pots. Someplace in my wallet, I think I still have a business card. When I went to Russia in 83, those were the days that you didn't just go to Russia from Eretz Yisrael. It's a different world in which we live. I had to have an identity that showed me to be somebody who's working in the United States. We didn't come from Eretz Yisrael. You couldn't go from Eretz Yisrael to Russia. Had to go via England. England take a flight to Moscow, and in England, we can say it now. An agent from the Israeli embassy made sure that we were given a boarding card from a flight from New York to London. Though we were never on the flight, but we had a real landing boarding card in order to be able to prove our story that we had left on flight such and such from New York, arrived in London, picked up a British Airways flight to Russia, to Moscow. And I had the business cards that showed, I don't want to say the name that I had on the business card, that's my Goyish name that I... But somebody by the name of Gold, I was a vice president in charge of a printing company in Manhattan. Printing. As much as Kolev and Pinchas knew about pots. They may have known more about pots. Now, so we see... As we read through this pasuk, we see significant differences between the Meraglim in the days of Moshe and the Meraglim in the days of Yeshua. Here are people who are really being sent as spies. And what are they told? What are they told to do? They are told, L'churu et ha'aretz vet Yericho, see the land and Yericho. And this is in preparation for the first major battle that will take place. They went, and they came to the house of a woman who was a zona, who shma Rachav, her name was Rachav, and they stayed there. Now, there's another extremely important point that we've made in the past, and it's very important here. Forget about the fact that we know who these Meraglim were. Their identity was revealed by Chazal and by the Medrash later. The Navi is very clear in not telling us their names. Their identity is not revealed. In the Sedra, with a great deal of fanfare, the names of all 12 are revealed. Vayishlach otam Moshe, and Moshe sent them from Midbar Paran, Alpi Hashem, Kulam, Anoshim, Roshim, Bnei Yisrael, Hemo. These were all people who were the heads of Israel. And for Eleshim Otam, and these are their names, Lemate Ruven Shamu Aben Zakur Lemate Shimon. They go through the whole list, each one, who their names were. And then at the after all 12 names are mentioned, Eleshim Otam Hashim, these are the names of the people Asher Sholach Moshe, that Moshe sent Laturat Haaretz to tour the land. There's a big difference between the Sedra where the names are mentioned and the Haftorah where they are anonymous. There is, first of all, when we talk about a mission that is indeed supposed to be a secret mission, so as we've pointed out, a secret mission, you send spies, you give them a completely different identity. That's what a spy is supposed to be. He has different papers and a different passport. Every attempt is made in order to conceal their real identity. In the Sedra, it's clear for all to know, for all time, who the spies were. But it goes one step further. There is what I call, in Torah, the ethics of anonymity. The ethics of anonymity means the following. One whose concern is the mission, the objective, and not his own personal interest, that man is ready to remain anonymous. His name is not known. He may never in his lifetime ever reveal that he was part of that mission. Maybe if he does, it will be 20 or 30 years later when there is when all the entire mission is declassified, that finally he'll come out with his memoirs and, you know, I was a spy for the Mossad. I went to Jericho for Yehoshua. But the ethics of the spy is that the mission is of the greatest significance. He doesn't count. He doesn't mean anything. And how is that presented by Tanakh? It is presented by virtue of the fact that they are anonymous. Their names are not told to us. A person with a name means that he represents himself, his own interest. He represents his tribe's interest. That's not a spy in the tradition of great spies who are ready to make sacrifices for their people. More than that, anonymity is something that we find to be one of the significant aspects of Gedolei Yisrael. Moshe Rabbeinu, when he comes down from, when he's told on the mountain that the Jewish people have sinned and made an Egel, so God says to Moshe, Hanicholi, leave me and let my anger consume them. I will destroy them and I will make you into a great people. Moshe says to God, listen, God, I want you to forgive those people, the Imayin, and if you don't forgive them, Mecheni no mi sitricha asher katapta, erase my name from the Sefer that you have written. I don't want my name to appear there. I am not the leader of this people so that I should preside over the destruction of that people, and I should emerge as a great people. I am a servant of the people. My greatest interest is their well-being, and therefore my name is not important. And therefore, indeed, it says Parshat Tetzaveh, which is usually read the week of Moshe Rabbeinu's Yahrzeit, Zion Adar, Moshe Rabbeinu's name does not appear there. It's the one Sedra in all of Torah where his name does not appear. And his name not appearing is really a sign of the greatness of Moshe Rabbeinu. And where do we learn the ethics of being anonymous? You know where we learn it from? We learn it from the Rabbeinu Shalalem himself. The Rabbeinu Shalalem is like and not like an artist who has painted a magnificent canvas. But what does the artist do when he has completed the canvas? Some place down at the bottom of the canvas on the right hand side, he is going to sign his name. God created a world, a universe, a cosmos, and did not sign his name down at the bottom. If one is intelligent enough, you can see him. If you're not intelligent, you won't see him. Could he make himself manifest at any moment in history? Of course he could. But he prefers to be anonymous. When Moshe Rabbeinu at the snare asks God, "What is your name? What should I tell the people when I come to Egypt?" So he says, after he says, "Eheyeh Hashem, Eheyeh, and Eheyeh Shlochani Aleichem," God says, "Zeshmi Le'olam, V'zeh Zichri L'dor V'dor." This is my name, Le'olam, forever. And Rashi points out there, Le'olam is spelled Lamed Ayin Lamed Mem, without a vav between the Ayin and the Lamed. Le'olam, meaning I am concealed. Ilum, shame, a name that is concealed. God says, the fact is that in creation I am concealed, I am hidden. My concern is for the well-being of man, and therefore I'm ready to remain anonymous. The miraglim that are sent by Yahushua, their names are not mentioned because they are really spies. They are really people who go out there concerned for the well-being of those who have sent them, and therefore they are ready, like all spies have learned to be ready. If need be, they will die without uttering a word who sent them or why they're here. They may give them their phony name and their Tudat Zehut number, but no more than that. It means, of course, therefore, that there's a tremendous difference between the miraglim that are sent by Yahushua and those that are sent by Moshe. Here are real spies. Spies who go out into the cold. They have their phony identity. They're out to do the mission. They don't count. They're unimportant. Everything is for the mission. But a careful reading of what takes place over here in the Haftarah, and you know what? Like pointed out in the past, these spies, I think I once called it, it's a slapstick comedy. These spies are such kalyakas. They're simply, there's something that goes terribly wrong with the entire mission from the very moment they come to Yericho. Pasuk Aleph, they're sent, and they come to Yericho. Pasuk Bet. And it is told to the king of Yericho, "Behold, people have come here this night from the children of Israel to spy out the land." They just walked into the city, and their cover is blown. The king of Yericho already knows. These fellas haven't even had a chance yet to put on their trench coats. They don't have their sunglasses. They haven't done a thing yet. They haven't found out any information. Instantly, they're in the city, and it's already told to the king of Yericho that they've come. The spies are here. Everybody knows about it. What does he do? He immediately sends. The king of Yericho sends to Rochav, saying, "Send out the people who have come to you, who have come to your house, because they have come to spy out the land." Pasuk Bet and Pasuk Gimel should already be indications to us that while the mission is an absolute failure, it is at the same time a howling success. Why is it that the king of Yericho knows immediately? You know why he knows immediately? Because this is a city that is locked so tight. This is shut. They know everybody who comes and who goes. This is a city that is now waiting for the onslaught of the children of Israel. This is a city that is frightened out of its wits. And I'll prove to you that they're frightened. What happens if, under normal circumstances, a king finds out that there are spies? What do you do? you send in SWAT teams to take up positions all the rooftops. You send in your chevra. And we know what they do, you know. You're pushing the door, throwing a grenade. Move in. Can you imagine how he deals with these vicious spies who have come? The king of Yericho sends Barachov saying, send out those people who have come to your house. They don't even go into the house to investigate. They don't go through the house room by room. They don't turn over the furniture, break down doors, smash through the apartment. No, the king of Yericho, from the safety of his palace, sends men to tell Rahab, who is in the safety of her home, send out the men. And she goes and she hides the men, and at the door she gives the messengers of the king, his palace guard, she gives them a song and a dance, and they take it all. Nobody goes into the house to find out what's happening. Nobody checks, is it true or it's not. They know that these spies have arrived. They know that they're here in the city. They know that they were at her house. And nobody even goes in to check. But he goes in to check. We have one other place in Tanakh, a similar story we have in another place in Tanakh. Shaul wants to kill David. Shaul wants to kill David. David is married to Michal bat Shaul, Michal the daughter of Shaul, and she's going to be important later on in this year as well. So it says, in Tanakh it says, Vayishlach Shaul malachim el bet David. Shaul sent messengers to the house of David l'shamro, to watch him, v'lahamito baboker, and to kill him in the morning. Vatageid l'David Michal ishto lemor. Michal, the wife of David, said to him, if you're not going to flee and save your life, halaylo, tonight, macharatam umat, tomorrow you're dead. And there we have the famous story of Michal letting David down out of the window. He flees, and she puts some things in her bed to make it look as though he is there. In the morning, the messengers of Shaul come into the house, and they check his bedroom, and they reveal that David has fled. Now, Shaul wants to kill David. What do you mean you send people to watch the house during the night? Watch the house during the night, don't let him get away, and kill him in the morning. Why not kill him now? There's no time as good as the present. Why not kill him now? You know why not kill him now? Because at the same time that Shaul wants to kill David, he's frightened of David. There's something about David that frightens him. Shaul knows, or he senses, that David has been anointed as king of Israel. Shaul begins to feel that Malchus is slipping out of his hands. At the same time that he hates and wants to kill David, he is frightened of him. Precisely the same thing is taking place in the Haftarah. The king of Yericho sends men to the house of Rahav, and you know, it's sort of the mouse that roared. Here they are, they surround the house. And the message is, send out the people who have come into your home. They know, the king knows that they've come to her house. But no, send them out. Send them out. Why don't they go into the house to check? So, you know, if we want to use the old joke, if there'd be one of them, he might send people into the house. But there are two Jews there. Two Jews. This is already an army. This is an army. This is he's afraid of. They're frightened. The fact is, if the Meraglim know about what's taking place, they already know that this is a city that is gripped with absolute fear of Klal Yisrael. They know that Klal Yisrael is on the way, and there is nothing that they can do about it. From another point of view, and this is extremely important, according to the Malbim, and it may be as well according to Rashi, here is an entire chapter in Tanakh. Whole chapter in Tanakh. There's going to be a whole conversation between them and Rachav. They're going to leave the city. She's going to let them out through her window, which is in the wall of the city. They're going to flee someplace up into the mountains of Hodei Yehuda, I don't know, or Midbar Yehuda, someplace out there between Yericho and the Yamamelech. They're going to hide there for 3 days. They're finally going to come back to the camp, and they're going to give the message to Yahushua. According to the Malbim and Rashi, the entire mission became unnecessary. The Malbim learns that Vayishlach Yahushua here means that Yahushua had sent earlier. What happens in the first chapter? In the first chapter, there God appears to Yahushua and he tells him, "My servant Moshe has died. Now arise and cross the Jordan. In 3 days you're crossing." And all of a sudden, God seems to be giving all sorts of guarantees and assurances to Yahushua that you're going to cross into Eretz Yisrael miraculously. According to the Mefarshim, the Meraglim had been sent during the 30 days of the mourning for Moshe, before God appeared to Yahushua. The moment that God appears to Yahushua, he knows that he doesn't need Meraglim, they've already been sent, but the mission can't be aborted. They're already in Yericho. And after they're already in Yericho, he finds out that God is taking them across the Yarden, which means that the whole Perek really describes a mission that didn't have to take place. And after they were sent out of their mission, it was already meaningless. So what's the point for the Perek? What's the point for the Perek? It also brings us to the question, what's the point of why this Haftarah? So usually we would say that the purpose of the reason why this chapter is chosen as a Haftarah is because, you know, in the Sedra there are Meraglim, and in the Haftarah there are Meraglim. And yes, Meraglim sent by Moshe, and the only ones who still remain from those 12 Meraglim 38 years later are Yahushua and Kalev, and they are now the two. Yahushua is the one who sends Meraglim, Kalev is one of the Meraglim. Everything has come full cycle. Jews are now ready and prepared to go into Eretz Yisrael. All right, that's one. But this is an idea that we began to develop last year, and I want to try to develop more fully now. I believe that the real reason why this Perek is chosen as the Haftarah is not so much because of the Meraglim, of course. The Meraglim are also important and significant. The reason why the Haftarah is chosen is because of what comes after the story of the Meraglim. So we're going to develop it more fully now. What happened to my alright, we have the microphone. Okay, that crisis is passed. Let's go. I believe the real reason why this Haftarah is chosen is because of this most unusual woman. This most unusual woman of all. And that woman is Rachav. Rachav is very, very special. And I want to point out to you, Rachav is very special. Let's read. Before they went to sleep, she went up to them on the roof. Atomer el ha'anoshim. Listen to what this woman says. Now, you have to remember the history of this woman. The fact is, she was a woman of ill repute. She was a woman of ill repute. The Gemara says, the Gemara in Masechet Zvachim says about her that Kol Gedolei V'Sorei Kanan, the great of Kanan, Hayurigilim Etzla, used to be by her. In the event that she would have been a simple innkeeper, Tanakh would not have referred to her as a zona. I don't think any innkeeper would want to be known as a zona. There are clear overtones and undertones. I mean, there's a clear impression that is conveyed by the word zona. Zona means a prostitute. Chazal tell us she was. That she was. And all of the great, but she was not a simple prostitute. We're talking about a high-class prostitute. More than that. The Gemara says, remember the company that she keeps. Gemara Masechet Megillah says, Arba Noshim Yefeifiyot Hayu Ba'olam. There were four beautiful women in the world. Sarah, Rachel, Rachav, Sarah, Rachav, Abigail, and Esther. And the Gemara goes on to say, Ulaman Diyamar, and according to the one who says that Esther Yerak Roket Haita, there is an opinion that says Esther was not really such an outstandingly beautiful woman, but there was some kind of divine chain that she had, and therefore she seemed beautiful in the eyes of all who beheld her. So then we're missing one of the four beautiful women in the world. So according to that man, the Holy Gemara says, Mafik Esther, take out Esther, Uma'ayil Vashti, and put in Vashti. According to the second opinion of the Gemara, the four most beautiful women were Sarah, Rachav, Abigail, and Vashti. Very unusual woman, this Rachav. Gemara says that she was 10 years old when Jews went out of Egypt. She is now 50. Now, 40 years later, she is 50 years old. Listen to what this woman says. Batomer el ha'anoshim, she said to the men, Yadati, I know, ki natan Hashem lachem et haaretz, I know that God has given this land to you. V'chi nafla imatchem aleinu, the fear of you has fallen upon us. V'chi nomogu kol yoshvei haaretz mipneichem, all of the inhabitants of the land have melted before you. Ki shamanu, because we heard, et asher hovish Hashem et mei yansuf mipneichem, that God had dried the waters of the yansuf from before you, b'tzeitchem, mimitzrayim, when you went out of Egypt. Do you know what she is referring to now? An event that had taken place 40 years earlier. And you know what? She also knows current events. V'asher asitem, and we know what you did, l'shnei malchei amori, to the two kings of the Amori, who are on the other side of the Jordan, to Sichon and to Og. Asher hecheramtem otam, whom you destroyed, that had taken place in the last few months of the life of Moshe, only months before. Vanishma, we heard, Vayimaslav Avenu, and our heart melted, Vlokama O Druach Bish Mipnechem, and no man has spirit to stand up before you. Ki Hashem Elokechem, because God your God, Hu Elokim Bashamay Mimal, He is the God in heaven above, Val Ha'aretz Mitachat, and on the earth below. Do you hear a statement by a Zona? If you want to know how significant the statement is, the Gemara says, Medrash says the following. Yitro, when he came out to the desert, he said, Ki gadol Hashem mikol ha'elokim, mikol ha'elohim, God is greater than all other gods. Yitro had worshipped all the deities on the face of this earth until he arrived at a conclusion that the greatest one of them all is the God of Israel. The God of Israel. Amru, they said, Shalohiniyach avidah v'zorah ba'olam shalohavta, there wasn't an avodah zorah that he didn't serve. Therefore he said, Mikol ha'elohim. God is greater than all other gods. Natan mamash ba'avodah zorah, which means that even in this statement where he extols the virtue of God, he still seems to be saying that the other deities are also deities, but the greatest of them all is the God of Israel. Further, the Medrash goes on to say, "V'Naaman hodeh b'davar yoter." Remember, we learned about Naaman Naaman was the guy who came before Elisha to be healed of his tzaraat. So it says, and we pointed it out at the time, and I did not remember this medrash, we pointed out how magnificent it was, this guy. The moment that he comes out of the Yarden after having dipped seven times into the Yarden, he comes out and he says, Hineinu yadati, I know ki ein Elohim b'chol ha'aretz, there is no ein Elohim b'chol ha'aretz, there is no God in the entire earth, ki im b'Yisrael, only in Israel. Can you imagine? A guy makes a statement of this sort. And then the Gemara, the Medrash goes on to say, the Rochav hoda b'davar yoter. Rochav said more than Yitro and more than Naaman, because what does Rochav say? Ki Hashem Elokechem hu Elokim b'shamayim mimal v'al ha'aretz mitachat. Yitro said, the greatest of all gods is the God of Israel. Naaman said, there is only one God on the face of this earth, and that's the God of Israel. She sees the God in heaven above and in the earth below. She said more than all of them. Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Amar HaKadosh Baruch Hu l'Rachav, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said to Rachav, At Amart, you said, Ki Hashem Elokechem Hu Elokim, you said that God is the greatest of all. Nicha Ba'aretz, I can understand that you said that God is the greatest on the face of this earth. Shema b'shamayim imal, how do you know about what's taking place in the heavens above? Atah Amart, you said, Mashalo ra'id ve'inayich, you said something that you could not see with your eyes. You talk about God being in heaven above, the greatest in heaven above, the only one. You said something that you could not see with your own eyes. Chayech, I swear to you, shebneich omeid v'ro'eh ma shelo ro hanivim. A child of yours is going to arise, and he's going to see prophecy of a sort that was not seen by any other. The Gemara says further, Amar Rav Nachman, a Gemara in the Sechet Megillah. Rav Nachman says, Chulda Hanevio, there was a prophetess by the name of Chulda. Chulda Hanevio was Mibnei Banav Shel Yehoshua. Chulda Hanevio was a descendant of Yehoshua. And they bring a pasuk to prove it. So the Gemara asks, Rav Enos Saba asked on Rav Nachman, we learned elsewhere, eight prophets who are priests, Yotsu Me Rochav Hazona, came from Rochav the Zona. Eight prophets who were priests, Kohanim, came from Rochav Hazona. And they are Nadia, Baruch, Saraya, Machseya, Yirmiya, Chilkiya, Hanamel, Shalom. Hanamel and Shalom, you will remember from the Haftarah of Parshat Bahar. Hanamel ben Shalom is the one who comes to Yirmiyahu when he is in prison and offers him a real estate deal that he can't refuse. Buy my land, that is my field that is in Anatot. This is as Yerushalayim is about to collapse before the forces of Babel. These were all prophets. They were Kahanim, and they came from Rochav Hazona. And Rabbi Yehuda says, also Chulda Hanaviyah was also from the descendants of Rochav Hazona. So we have a contradiction. Rav Nachman had said Chulda Hanaviyah came from Yehoshua bin Nun. And now we have a statement of our rabbis that Chulda Hanaviyah was from the children of Rochav Hazona. So the Gemara says, no problem. Amalei Eino Saba said, Mini uminach tistayim shmaita, from you and from me. Take both of these statements together and we will explain the Gemara. The Igaida, she converted, Rachav converted, and she married no less of a person than Yehoshua bin Nun. The Nazva Yehoshua married him. Do you understand what we're talking about over here? Here is a woman who for 40 years of her life is a zona. All of the great of Canaan come to Rochav Hazona. And we're going to see, she lets them out, the two malachim, she lets them, the two miraglim who come from Yahushua, she lets them out her window, which is in the wall of the city, with a rope. She sends them down the rope, out of the window, to the wall. The chevel, out of the chalon that is in the choma. And Chazal tell us that that chevel, and that chalon, and that choma was used for movement in both directions. There were those who came to Rachav, climbing up the chevel into the chalon that was in the choma, and they left that way too. And here is a woman who, having been this woman of ill repute for 40 years, she says, I know that God has given this land into your hands, and there is none other than the God of Israel, who is God on heaven, in heaven and on earth. I believe that what the reason why the Haftorah is chosen, the Haftorah is chosen in order that we be able to compare and contrast 10 Gedolei Yisrael in the times of Moshe, who cannot see the truth before their very eyes. 10 Gedolei Yisrael in the days of Moshe, who ate man in the morning, drank water that came out from a rock. There was an Amud Onon and an Amud Eish above them. They had crossed through the Yam Suf. They had seen the 10 plagues. They had experienced God Himself. And here, at the same time that they experienced God, there's a 10-year-old girl living in Yericho who is about to embark. Who is about to embark on a life of immorality, and she is able to see more clearly than they are. The Haftorah is, on the one hand, an indictment of the Meraglim of the Sedra. The Zona of Yericho achieves a knowledge of God that surpasses anything that the Meraglim are able to see. Remember, she didn't experience any of this. What's the secret of Rachav? I don't know what the secret of Rachav is. It may very well be that the secret of Rachav is that she was able to be more objective. The Arizal says, this is the Arizal, says that the ten Meraglim knew that they would not be fit for leadership in Eretz Yisrael. They were fine as leaders in the desert, but once Klal Yisrael would come into Eretz Yisrael, they would be part of a previous generation. New talents and new leadership would be necessary, and it was this that colored their view and the report that they gave when they returned to the camp. They were not objective. They were concerned, either on a conscious level or not on a conscious level. They were concerned with their own position, status, power. And when a person is concerned with themselves, very, very difficult to see reality in all of its clarity. This woman, Rachav, was able to see so clearly. That's what's unusual about her. She was able to pick herself up from the depths that she had descended to. She was able to see things clearly. And remember, she is put in the same category with a Yitro. Yitro became the father-in-law of Moshe Rabbeinu. Worshipped every idol in the world, but was finally able to arrive at an intellectual recognition of the existence of God. And Rachav is a outdoes Yitro. She sees God on heaven, in heaven above, and the earth below. You know what it means? A person may have fallen to the very depths and is able to rise. Listen. Better shidduch than to be married to Yehoshua ben Nun. Yehoshua ben Nun is the is the great leader of Israel. No, so on the country, whatever question you ask, and how difficult the questions are, all that they point out is the greatness of this unique and unusual woman. And therefore, Chazal, the Medrash, in fact, tells us, you were able to see something that you had not experienced. Do you know what your reward is going to be? There are children that are going to come from you who are going to see clearly. Prophets. Why do prophets come from Rachel? That's her reward. She saw, and she was able, by virtue of her own intellect and intelligence, she was able to remove herself and see. Because she sees clearly, she is rewarded with those who are going to see clearly. Chazal, there's also a medrash that tells us that when she lets the meraglim down the chevel through the chalon that's in the choma, she says, Rabbeinu Shalom, for 40 years I sinned with the chevel, the chalon, and the choma. I want you now, with this act where she saves the meraglim and sends them on their way, in the schut now that I've used the chevel, the chalon, and the choma for good, I want you to forgive me those 40 years that I use them as part of my profession. What the Haftorah is saying is that it is possible to reach the very depths and rise and see things clearly. All right, we're not finished with Rachav. We mentioned somebody else who let somebody out of a window. Michal, the daughter of Shaul, lets David out the window. It doesn't say that she used a rope. No talk of a rope. But you know, ropes become significant. Who was one of the descendants of Rachav? Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu was one of the descendants of Rachav. The Medrash says the following. Omer Rabbi Avu. Rabbi Avu says, B'shor sheholach Eved Melech HaKushi lahalot et Yirmiyahu min habor. When Eved Melech HaKushi went to bring Yirmiyahu out of the pit. Eved Melech HaKushi, some say that this was his the name that was used on certain occasions by Baruch Ben Neriah, who was the secretary of Yirmiyahu. Yirmiyahu had been thrown into a pit down below into the belly of Yerushalayim, and he was afraid that he was going to die there, and he pleaded that he should be taken out of the bar. Finally, the king gives permission. Mahu Omelo, it's a deep pit, and he's down there, and Baruch Ben Neriah is up at the top, and what does Baruch Ben Neriah say to him? I'm lowering down a rope to you. Take shmatis, or old garments, and put them under your arms so that the rope shouldn't cut into you. Simna balu'e haschavot tachat atzilut yadecha. Put the old clothing under your armpits. Mitachat lachavalim. Vayas Yirmiyahu kein, and Yirmiyahu did so. Oma Yirmiyahu, Medrash says, Yirmiyahu said to himself, or he thought, the thought passed through his mind, Halavai v'hayali sulam echad, if only I'd have a ladder. If only I would have a ladder. Yirmiyahu, it's going to be difficult to pull him out of the pit with the ropes. Amalo HaKadosh Baruch Hu, God said to Yirmiyahu, sulam atam levakesh? You want a ladder? Mazik natcha v'chevel your bubba, all the way back there, Rachav. Let them down with a rope. Lo kenktiv, isn't that what it says? Batori dame, b'chevel, she let them down with ropes? Af ato, you too, it'll be enough with a rope. And then it says, v'yimshuchu et Yirmiyahu b'chavalim, they pulled him with the ropes, v'yalu otom min habor, and they took him out of the pit. with whom does God remember something of this sort after so many generations? Only if we're talking about a woman who is an absolute tzaddikus, who is now in the process of tshuva. And what is she doing now? She really means that she wants to use all of those tools of her profession. She wants to use them now in order to save Jewish lives. That's what she wants to do. But you know what? If you're in the process already of tshuva and you can see so clearly, maybe you should have given a moment's thought. Let the malachim down with a ladder. Maybe there'll be some discomfort as they go down with a rope. And generations later, Yirmiyahu is going to be raised out of the pit with ropes and not with a ladder. We may not be able to relate to this demand that HaKadosh Baruch Hu makes of Yirmiyahu hundreds of years later. But one thing is certain, that Yirmiyahu is Yirmiyahu, and the Bubba Rachav was an extremely unique and very, very special woman. And special about her is, yes, from the very depths, she is able to rise to such a recognition of what God is. She therefore emerges as one of the great, unusual women of Tanakh. And I get the feeling sometimes Rachav is overlooked. And this is, therefore I believe, the real reason why this HaTorah is chosen. Remember, we're talking about Meraglim who are really failures in their job. Their cover is blown immediately. The whole mission was unnecessary because Yoshua no longer needed Meraglim. After they were sent off, he finds out that God is taking them across the Red Sea. So what is it that we learn from this parak in Tanakh? What we learn from this parak in Tanakh is the blessing of being able to see clearly, to see events clearly, and to be able to interpret them. And unfortunately, not everybody is blessed with the ability to see clearly, for whatever reason it is. And there are all sorts of even religious reasons why people do not see events clearly. What should be seen as the Yad Hashem, the hand of God, not everybody is ready to see that such and such is the hand of God. And Rachel, this unusual woman, she sees with such absolute clarity. At the beginning of the Sedra, the Meraglim are sent Matur et Haaretz, right, to see out the land. The end of the Sedra is the Parsha of Tzitzis, where it says, V'lo toturu acharei levavichem v'acharei einechem. When you're looking for something, you're out to see, you have to be careful. Lo toturu acharei levavichem v'acharei einechem. Don't look at things through your own eyes and your own heart, what your eyes want to see and what your heart wants to see. You have to be able to see clearly. You have to be able to see things clearly. And yes, the Meraglim who go and their names are emblazoned forever in Torah are a far cry from two Malachim who go off with their identity is not mentioned, and whatever they are, they're no more than pop peddlers. They have no interest of their own. Rachel is now turning her back on everything that she was. She turns her back on her whole society, her upbringing. She is really rising to the heights of Kedusha and Tahara and ethics and morality from the very depths. This is an unusual woman. She is the one that Chazal want us to learn from. She is the antidote to the Meraglim. She is the opposite of the Meraglim. It means, therefore, that a Rachav may conceivably be able, and obviously she does, she sees more clearly than the Meraglim were able to see. She has no personal interest anymore. By her, it's a matter of she heard and she saw. And you know what? According to Chazal, she was also upset about something. She was 10 years old when Jews went out of Egypt. And she felt that she had to do tshuva for the 40 years. The 40 years until age 50 when she converted. Since she had already, at age 10, she knew about Kriyat Yamsuf and Yitziat Mitzrayim, she should have converted then. But she continued in her profession of ill repute all of those years, and she shouldn't have. Otherwise, why does she ask of God, I sinned with Hevel, Chalon, and Chomah, I sinned with that all of those years, now forgive me? What does she have to ask forgiveness for? She was a goy, goyish, she was a shitzu. What does she have to do tshuva for that for? Because she felt in her own neshama that she had already begun to see the truth when she was 10 years old. There's also a chazal that says that in order that she should be forgiven for Hevel, Chalon, and Chomah, she now accepts upon herself Chala, Nida, and Hadlakat Haner. Very, very special woman. Dacha, very special woman. Okay.